This is based on some work I did with Henry Tai and Hassan last year. And a lot of the content of this talk is going to appear very soon, probably next month, in a paper by me and Henry Tai. So there are going to be a lot of talks on... So let us assume that string theory gives a landscape of supersymmetric and non-supersymmetric vacua. So of all the superstring vacua, why does the universe end up in a particular vacuum that leads to today's universe as we see it? Why only three large only three large space dimensions? Why not a ten dimensional supersymmetric vacuum? Do we need some version of the anthropic principle? In this talk, we're going to propose that probably not. And the framework to answer some of these questions will be the spontaneous creation of the universe, which will use the idea of the wave function of the universe. Now, the spontaneous creation of the universe is the creation of de Sitter space-time with a given cosmological constant from nothing. Nothing in the sense of no classical space-time. Maybe string theory will tell us something about what this nothing is. Okay. So those were the key questions. So before going further, some pictures. I'm going to talk about the S4 instanton a lot. So what's the S4 instanton? Well, it's a ball in four dimensions, Euclidean space-time dimensions. And it's an instanton. And just like any instanton, it has this initial state and a turning point, and it comes back to that initial point. Okay? So this is a bound solution, the S4 instanton. The S4 instanton can be cut and joined to a closed universe with a positive cosmological constant. Okay, so what I'm doing here is I'm cutting the S4 ball right here at its equator and joining it with a de Sitter space-time. Below this point, the space-time is Euclidean, and above this, it's Lorentzian. Okay, so what this shows is the creation of a de Sitter space-time from nothing. So that's my next slide. This is related to the Hartle-Hawking no boundary proposal. So Hartle and Hawking gave a prescription to find the wave function of the universe, starting from a null, nothing state, to a given three-dimensional hypersurface. So we work in Euclidean space-time. That's the Euclidean action. And you just evaluate this path integral from the null geometry to a given geometry of three space-time dimensions. And one can work out this path integral using the saddle point approximation. And the wave function can be evaluated. Okay? The Euclidean action is given by this, where g is the Newton constant, r is the Ricci scalar, and lambda is the positive cosmological constant. Okay? Now, in general, working out this path integral is pretty tough. So one uses the mini superspace, ansatz. So here's the metric. We're going to have just one scale factor A, which is related to the size of the S4 ball in the previous slide. Okay. So we use this metric ansatz, and we can write down the Euclidean Einstein equation. And the solution will give us the S4 instanton. One can continue it to Lorentzian spacetime and get the de Sitter spacetime. So that's the idea with the spontaneous creation of the universe and the Harrow-Hawking wave function. Notice that the Euclidean action goes as minus 1 over lambda. Okay, so it's negative and goes as 1 over lambda. And the probability, which is just the mod square of the wave function, also goes as e to the 1 over lambda. Now, there's certain problems with the Harrell-Hawking wave function. There's an infrared problem here. So if we consider scenarios with four form flux, or scenarios like the one proposed by Busso-Polchinski, where lambda is dynamical, then the wave function tends to choose lambda going to zero value, which corresponds to the spontaneous creation of a universe with infinite size, because the size of the universe goes as 1 over square root of lambda. Okay? What this really means is that the Euclidean action is not bounded from below. It goes down to minus infinity. If you go to Lorentzian spacetime and write down the, in Lorentzian spacetime, write down the gravitational potential, you'll see that it's not bounded from below. That's why the wave function tends to choose lambda equals zero. Okay, so the wave function is not normalizable. So there are other problems too, and they were discussed in this paper, and they are regarding the topology change when you talk about S4. The topology is not really fixed there. And that is also related to the infrared problem. Okay. Now, back in the 80s, people kept hoping that loop corrections might cure the problem, but turns out that loop corrections, and more recently string corrections, as have been discussed by Uri, Verlinde, and Waffa, don't quite cure this problem, as it's an infrared problem, not an ultraviolet problem. Okay, so there's a problem there. Now, let me take a detour here and talk about condensed matter. So back in the 80s, Caldera and Leggett discussed decoherence and quantum tunneling, okay? And the whole idea was very simple. Consider a universe which is made of a system and an environment, and the system and the environment are coupled to each other. So I use the variable Q to show the system, and the variables X alpha show the environment. And the two are coupled. Okay? The coupling can be linear, or you can generalize it to nonlinear cases. So there's a coupling. And we would like to find out the effect of this coupling on the tunneling of the system from the metastable minimum to the true minimum. Okay? Now, naively, well, anything might happen. It might enhance the tunneling. This, you know, the environment couples with the system might enhance the tunneling. It might suppress the tunneling. It might not change anything. Well, to find out what really happens, you have to trace out the environment. Okay? So here's the environment. You work out the path integral, trace out the environment, look at the bound solution, and what you see is that tunneling is suppressed. The correction chi in the exponential is greater than zero. That's right. Right, so if you, so that is true that they were looking at a dissipative system, which will impose certain conditions on C alpha. But the whole analysis doesn't really require any dissipative system. The result is really pretty general, except for certain pathological cases. So it's a general result. Okay. Now, a few comments. What really happens here? What's the physics? Why is the tunneling getting suppressed? The reason is this. When we introduce the environment, we are increasing the dimensions by adding extra variables, right? The x alpha variables. And the increase in the Euclidean action, which is related to the bound solution, is due to a longer path length in the many-dimensional space. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is that the interaction of Q with the environment interferes with its attempt to tunnel. And this interaction can be seen as attempts by the environment to measure or observe Q. And that repeated measurement suppresses the tunneling. That's another way to look at it. And a third way to look at it is that the interaction of the system with the environment introduces decoherence, and the system behaves more and more classically. Now, talking about the wave function of the universe, remember the infrared problem. As lambda goes to zero, the spontaneous creation prefers larger and larger universe, a classical kind of universe. Okay? And we're going to use this idea of decoherence to cure that problem. Okay? Again, I will stress that a one-loop correction is not going to change the result much. Another thing is that decoherence, in this case, the case that Caldera and Leggett considered, changed the answer quantitatively. But when we introduce decoherence to gravity, it will change the result in a qualitative manner. Okay. Now, before that, some of you might be wondering, why an environment for de Sitter spacetime? Well, the reason is this. If you really want to take the wave function of the universe idea seriously, then the Wheeler-DeWitt equation has many independent solutions. And naively, the universe should be a superposition of all these different solutions, wave functions. So the environment offers as a source of decoherence and explains the classical evolution of the universe. So this morning, I was drinking coffee outside, and these two guys were standing next to me. They were like, there's a talk about the wave function of the universe. Whoa, close our eyes. The wave function might collapse. Well, you're safe because of this decoherence. Okay. I will come to that in the next slide. Okay. Now, you need a classical evolution for the calculation of density perturbations. Okay. And the environment from the Euclidean region, I will introduce environment in the next slide, can be continued to the Lorentzian region to get density perturbations in universe. So the environment is going to be the metric and non-metric perturbations. Okay. So when I wrote down the metric for the mini superspace approximation, I included only this part. But now I'm also going to include the perturbative modes, epsilon ij's. And these epsilon ij's can be expanded in spherical harmonics over S3. And we will treat that as the environment. Now, one can also include a scalar field and include the perturbative modes around the scalar field as the environment. Notice that this is the original action without any environment. And the introduction of all these perturbative modes just introduces this sum over all the modes in the action. So let's see what happens now. So we are looking at the environment-induced tunneling suppression of the Hartle-Hawking wave function. Okay. So here's the metric. And right now, let's just talk about the metric perturbations. Let's see what happens at the pure gravity level. So here's the Euclidean action. A is the scale factor. Lambda is the positive cosmological constant. Here's the environment, the action coming from the perturbative modes. Dm is the amplitude of the nth tensor harmonic mode. Okay. Now, I can write down the path integral. One has to integrate over not only the scale factor, but also the amplitudes of the gravitational perturbations. Here's the complete Euclidean action. And just like Caldera and Leggett, we will trace out these perturbative modes. Now, I should stress that when I trace out the perturbative modes, the initial and the final values of the perturbations are not zero. What's the initial and the final values? It's at the south pole of the S4 and at the hemisphere, at the equator of the S4, after which I analytically continue it to Lorentzian space-time. So it's not a one-loop effect, and that's very important. Okay. So let me perform this trace over. And one can do that. And that's some technicalities. Here's the perturbative modes. One can write down the solutions for the perturbative modes. Turns out the relevant modes are the ones with very high values of the mode number n. And one can go through the calculation. And the result is the modified bounds. As you would naively expect, here's the bounds, the original bounds. You get an extra term, and you have to find the new bound solution. Okay? Notice that the correction is just like a radiation term. The decoherence has introduced, at this level, radiation into S4. Okay? Well, it's no longer S4, as I will show in the next slide. And how big is this correction is characterized by this factor nu, which goes as the string mass to the sixth. And the way this factor nu comes is because there is a large wavelength cutoff, which is the Hubble length cutoff, and there's a small wavelength cutoff, which is the string scale cutoff, when I talk about the perturbative modes which induce the decoherence. Now you can write down the equation of motion and look for the solution. Such equations have a whole class of solutions, the monotonic, the oscillatory, and the Einstein solutions. So you have to look for the right solutions and figure out that that indeed is the bound solution. And here's the solution. And S4 is recovered when nu equals zero. The condition that I showed in the previous slide at the bottom. It is a wave function of the universe with perturbations. No, I'm not assuming anything about what we are doing today. All I'm assuming is that at the very beginning, there was the scale factor and there were perturbations. And these perturbations go on to it's not the one loop correction. That's why the initial and the final values of the perturbations are non-zero. I will talk a little bit more about that in the next slide. Okay. That's a cutoff. That's right. That's another cutoff. That defines the environment. That's right. Exactly. Right. So that unboundedness, when you introduce a conformal factor and the gravitational action is unbounded, has to do with the gauge degrees of freedom. And the Hartle and Hawking give you a prescription to work out the path integral. And the whole thing there has to do with counting the right gauge degrees of freedom. So this is a separate issue, and that is a separate issue. Because this boundedness problem arises only in theories with dynamical lambda. Whereas the problem that you are saying exists in a theory with a fixed lambda too. So these are different problems. This is an infrared problem. And that is not really a problem because Hartle Hawking give you a prescription to work out the wave function by conformal rotation. Okay, so pictorially, what's happening by the inclusion of the environment is here's the S4 instanton. You include the environment, and if you plot the solution I gave you in the previous slide, there is a truncation at the bottom and the top, and the S4 gets squashed. Notice that at some point, this will just become a cylinder, which will correspond to the case when the bounce solution gets totally destroyed. Okay? Now here, this is the generalization of my second slide. The S4 has become this modified bounce, and you can glue it to a Lorentzian region and get a universe with perturbations. Now, to answer Bhaktar's question, so all we are doing is we are including these perturbations, which are very important, and we know there are these density perturbations. And they are also important for another reason, that once the universe gets created in the inflationary regime, you want universe to evolve classically. And these perturbations also give you the decoherence, which makes the universe evolve classically once it has popped up in the inflationary regime. That's right. So I'm talking only about closed universe. So I'm not bothered about wavelengths larger than Hubble length, because it's a closed universe. Question you ask is very relevant when you have ADS or, you know, an open universe. Those, yeah. I have traced over them, just like Caldera and Laguerre. That's right. And they lead to a classical evolution of the universe. That's right. The environment will be the perturbative modes. And the system is the scale factor. That's right. But then there will be smaller modes which will become relevant. So we have enough reservoir of those modes to create decoherence. The cutoff is always the Hubble scale, and the lower cutoff is always the string scale. And there's a motivation for those cutoffs. I'll come to that in the next slide. They don't work. It is still regular, that's right. Yeah. No singularities. Okay. So now let me write down the probability for the creation of the universe. It goes as the mod square of the wave function, so it will go as the exponential of some function f, and f is given by this. Notice that in the absence of decoherence, nu was zero, and you just got the Hartle-Hawking wave function, but the inclusion of decoherence gives you this extra term, and what that does is that bounds the wave function, okay? This should really be minus f here. This is minus f, okay? And this blue line here shows you the original Hartle-Hawking action, which was unbounded. So that's right. The reason there was a volume dependence was because we expect a volume dependence because the modes are number of modes is proportional to the volume, and that's introducing decoherence. But what happened was we forgot that the mode themselves might have a complicated frequency dependence on the geometry. So unlike Caldera and Laguerre, the environment has frequencies which are dependent on the shape. So that introduces another volume factor. So this but it does not change the results qualitatively, luckily. Okay. So now we have a boundedness to the Euclidean action. Okay. Another way to look at it is go to Lorentzian spacetime, write down the gravitational action, and in the absence of the decoherence term, the gravitational action is given by this, which is unbounded from below. And the decoherence term gives you a minimum value of the gravitational potential, which tells you that the gravitational potential is bounded. Do you have a question? That was the first part of the talk. And the next part, I'm going to talk about the application of the wave function to the landscape. Okay? So the wave function can be applied as a selection principle on the cosmic landscape that was discussed in this paper, and more recently by Uhuriba, Feinberg, Linde. The Hardin-Hawking wave function is problematic, so one has to intuit decoherence. In this paper, the authors noticed that the wave function prefers a universe with zero lambda and infinite flux. So they had the infrared problem, and that needs to be cured, and that's our upcoming paper. Okay, so one can study 10-dimensional generalizations of S4 instanton and apply it to the cosmic landscape. Because the string scale is lower than the Planck scale, therefore the semi-classical treatment is still valid. Okay? One can draw pictures for more complicated instantons. So here are the inflating dimensions, and on this side are the static dimensions. So such instantons are possible, where four space-time dimensions are inflating, and the others are compactified. One can write down the decoherence term for each and every of these instantons, okay? So here's the probability for the spontaneous creation. F will always go like the negative of the Euclidean action and correction term. For 10 dimensions, the correction term is expected to go like this. It's very important, and I should stress that C has to be calculated for each and every site on the landscape. Okay? In the effective four-dimensional theory, one expects the function f to go like this. Okay? So C has to be calculated for each and every vacuum. Now, one can apply the improved wave function on the landscape, and what's the result? And that's what Michael Douglas just mentioned. In our previous paper, we did a very preliminary analysis, and what that told us was that if you apply the wave function on the landscape, then KKL MMT kinds of models with flux compactification and an inflationary universe are preferred over other cases. Okay? And it's important that the decoherence has to be calculated for each and every site on the landscape. So that's a whole program. So what we gave you here is a recipe for the soup, the selection of the original universe principle. Okay? The improved wave function can give you the probability for each individual vacuum in the landscape. Decoherence term can be calculated for each individual vacuum. Comparing the probabilities will tell you which vacuum are preferred. And the picture is that once the universe gets created in the inflationary regime, then it will roll down and come to a site in the landscape that corresponds to today's universe with a low cosmological constant. So that's the idea. Now, one can make further speculations. So here's the landscape, and the universe gets spontaneously created at some point. It rolls down, comes to some neighborhood, and the result might be a block wave function, as has been discussed by Gordy Kane, Malcolm Perry, and Zitko in this paper. So the universe, after tunneling, might span a neighborhood of vacua, and it might sample out a whole bunch of sites in the landscape. And the decoherence can help the universe to settle down to a single vacuum as the universe cools down. It has implications. Decoherence has implications for eternal inflation. Decoherence can suppress tunneling, and therefore it can change the criterion for eternal inflation. And one can use decoherence to study all sorts of instantons and see how those instantons get modified. Now, a few comments before I conclude. At large values of the cosmological constant, as we all know, the semi-classical treatment breaks down. At small values of the cosmological constant, the decoherence effects become important. Those effects can be calculated, and they just become more and more important. So when I showed you this picture here, notice that the wave function peaks at around this value of lambda. Now you can ask me, do we trust the calculation at this value of lambda? Yes, because here the semi-classical approximation breaks down. Here there are all sorts of decoherence effects that will become more and more important, okay, which we haven't really calculated. But at this region, we think we have a pretty good control over the wave function. Okay, so that's good. We have calculated the decoherence effect of a pure gravitational field, taken into account only the gravitational perturbations. One can include matter fields as well, and we have done that, and the qualitative feature does not change. Okay. Now the parameter nu, which really decides how big is the decoherence effect, deforms the S4 instanton, and for large values, it will destroy the instanton. Now, let me conclude. So the modified Harald-Hawking wave function with the inclusion of the decoherence term can be used as a selection principle on the cosmic landscape. The decoherence effect can provide a lower bound to the gravitational action and cure the infrared divergence problem. And one needs a better understanding of decoherence, and its determination is important, and this is all work in progress. Inflationary vacua seem to be favored over supersymmetric or KKLT-like vacua. And it's very important to find other vacua, especially vacua with other large space dimensions, and determine the tunneling probability from nothing to any one of those. And that will tell us if four dimensions is something special or not. Okay, three large space dimensions. So that's it. Thanks. They won't literally be the same because that's right. That's right. So we expect the numbers to change, but we expect the qualitative result to stay the same, simply because of the, if you look at these numbers, this goes as 10 to the 18, this goes as 10 to the 9, and look at these numbers. So that's right. The main dependence is on lambda. The lambda controls where the wave function peaks. C is not going to be a big effect. It will decide. So we still trust this. Yes. So you're saying we have to include the large wavelengths, which I did. I just introduced two cutoffs, the string scale and the Hubble scale. And since I'm talking about a closed universe, I'm not bothered about wavelengths larger than the Hubble scale. In fact, they don't exist. And I'm not bothered about wavelengths less than the string scale, partly because, you know, the semi-classical treatment itself means that if I start including modes above the string scale energy, the whole treatment is going to break down. We do not see super horizon modes today. That's right. How do I know what? How? Right, so here I'm not, there's no super horizon mode because when I do the calculation, trace out the perturbations, there is a upper cutoff at the Hubble scale. All right, today there is, sure, because, right, today. Right, so when I'm doing this calculation, yeah, it's not about today, it's about the point when the universe gets created. So that's why I'm not talking about super horizon perturbations. But then the universe will inflate, there will be super horizon perturbations, and what you're saying will. So one, so the landscape will have all these sites, and one has to look at sites with various number of large extra dimensions. Calculate the wave function for each and every of those sites and compare. So right now we studied cases which one could realize using string theory, KKLT, KKLMMT, non-critical string theories, and so on. And KKLMMT is preferred. As people come up with more and more vacua, one has to calculate decoherence for each and every of them and find the wave function. Yeah. Is not arbitrarily large. That's because, so arbitrarily large will correspond to shorter and shorter cutoffs. Now, I impose the string cutoff because I'm doing a semi-classical treatment. Otherwise, the whole idea of semi-classical treatment fixed off. However, now one can ask what happens when one does a string theory treatment. That's what Uri, Verlinde, and Wafa did. Turns out the universe still prefers zero lambda and infinite flux, which is the infrared problem. The semi-classical treatment is valid as long as m string over m Planck is a small number. So you can play, like one can say twice m string. That's fine, qualitative results won't change. Oh, strings frame and Einstein frame. Things won't really change because by KKLMMT, we meant the one where you are looking at inflationary universe with the DD bar leading to inflation. And KKLT was the one where you are looking at lower values of the cosmological constant. That's the only difference. Right, so the motivation to include the environment and the decoherence. One can look at, right, so yeah, so what we look at is, so people when they calculate the S4 instanton, it's a mini superspace approximation. You just have the scale factor. One can go beyond that, include all the perturbations. Naively one would think, I mean, that's a valid thing to do. Let's go beyond mini superspace, include the perturbations. Yeah, so we are including the perturbations. And we want to see the effect of those perturbations on the tunneling, on the instanton solution. That's it. So the reason is we are interested only in the physics of the scale factor, what happens to the desitter as it pops up, not the perturbations. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it, when I look at the instanton solution, which tells me the tunneling, including the environment, gives you an interaction between the system, the scale factor, and the environment, the perturbative modes. I'm only interested in the physics of the scale factor, the physics of lambda. Okay, so let me clearly frame this question. The question we are asking is the same that Caldera and Laguerre asked. Here's a system, which in our case is the scale factor. One can include an environment, and looking at the linearized Einstein action, there is a coupling between my system and the perturbative modes. All I'm interested in is how the tunneling gets modified because of this interaction. We are going beyond minisuper space. That's right. Well, it changes things because, you know, lambda, you don't tunnel into a universe with lambda equals zero, which would be a huge universe, instead a universe where lambda seems to be the right size. There was no reason for it to be around the inflationary scale, right? In our previous paper, we did not have a control over nu. But now we have a control over nu, and we see that the universe pops up in the inflationary phase. So that in itself is interesting. And one can do a bit more too. Write down a Wheeler-DeWitt, not in terms of A, but in terms of the fluxes, like what Bolide and Uri and Wafa did. Play the whole game again, see what happens to the wave function that might lift the degeneracy between various fluxes. Right, so it's there are other prescriptions like Linde's prescription, right? And there are problems with that wave function, just like I showed you there was a problem with the Hartle-Hawking wave function. And one can take that attitude too. Let me start with Linde-Wilanken wave function and calculate what happens to the decoherence. And turns out that decoherence term does not cure the problems with Linde-Wilanken wave function. So I still don't know how to use that on the landscape. Yeah. So you are saying there are problems with analytically continuing it? In which case? I see. So those are open, like, right now, if you look at the Uri, Wilanken, and Wafa paper, they talk about the wave function, but they are still struggling with how to analytically continue it to the Lorentzian. So those are all important questions. And that's right. Otherwise, it's not going to tunnel through. So, but as long as, in this case, though, I don't see any problem.
then if you really wouldn't look in superspace, you have to really look at the full wave function of arbitrary universes of arbitrary metrics and so on. And maybe there's an extra factor because there's much more phase space available to you in this.
When I include the environment, there, yeah.
You call it environment. I just think about this going beyond the superspace.
Yeah, you can.
Without worrying about the continuous particles.
Yeah, and the reason I can, although the motivation for tracing